requested an indication that I would like to on the and my coach is another agent business. He will join us. Closing date of the 15th of June. So these that will present in the program this week are some of those that have indicated in through their submissions that we would like to address members of the committee. Members, you remember that these are not exclusive and special than the ones we undertook in the provinces. They all have and carry the same footing, and their strengths are all equal. They're all based on the substantive matters and whatever matters that are raised. So the content of the submissions are their strengths. It's not from because they've appeared in a national sitting in parliament, therefore they carry any special or exclusive weight in terms of the whole process. They're all equal and will be treated like that when considering the report. Those that were made in the provinces in various venues and these that are made here are submissions, they carry the same weight. And therefore, I'm making an appeal, members, that if you can, you don't have to ask questions. If you can, and you don't have to listen, you can just vote. And you can just vote the voting card. It's all clear that we have a complete set to identify people that will.
Hi, morning. I realized a few minutes into the meeting that it's the wrong meeting. I've looked for the environmental affairs, I can't find it. Everyone is directing me to the chamber, but the chamber is the Constitutional Review Committee. Okay. Yes, environmental affairs. Okay, cool. Assembly building, the chamber. B226. Okay, all right. Thank you. Yeah, all right, thanks. All right.
For the postponement of the ITEC. Now we are all put in disarray. Really, that's very frustrating. But let's hope that she will come. Okay, thanks DM for your submission, and I hope that the members do also understand the context under which we are submitting and following. A matter of delivering. Okay, let's get into the Marlon Island one and ask Philip to take us through.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable Chair, there are two documents. The one is a presentation, and the one is a table that describes or summarises the human resource incident that took place during the Marion Island Safety Corps expedition. So, Chair, we have tried to go into more detail following your request at the last meeting. We've gone into the detail both in terms of some of the infrastructural challenges, and we've gone into a lot of detail in terms of incident. You'll see that the table takes each incident and decides the action, the outcome, and then what stakeholders. We've also tried in the presentation to present to you the specific actions that we are taking in terms of tightening the recruitment, training, and various other processes that relate to putting the team together for management. Here we have Mr. Rishirangi Ndola, who is the Chief Director, responsible for managing our Southern Ocean Antarctic work. And we have Mr. Nish Devanantan, who is the Director of the Antarctic. Mr. Ndola will take us through the presentation, and then we can collectively respond the questions
that may be forthcoming thereafter. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will start with my presentation, but maybe before getting into the presentation, just a couple of things which is an appreciation for status of cooperation that we are having with the Department of Public Works, given some challenges that we are having that I'm going to explain throughout the presentation. Taking into consideration that within the Department of Public Works, especially the unit that deals with infrastructure in Antarctica and the sub-Antarctic islands, there is new leadership. And their commitment to assisting us has been very appreciated by us. And we are continuing to engage. And that appreciation also arises from the fact that we both realize the investment that has been made by our government and what our government continues to invest in terms of infrastructure and research and all related activities in as far as Marion Island, the Gough Island, and the SANA, the South African National Antarctic Expedition 4 in Antarctica. And as I'll be presenting in here, I would have preferred that perhaps some of the people that I'm working with from the Department of Public Works would have been here today. But unfortunately, I couldn't make the request that they be here. In particular, Mr. Tawang Ngwane, who is the Chief Director, and Tembeka Kholele, who is the Director looking at projects. Given the fact that I was out of the country attending the COP9 in Kenya, and I only came back recently, and I learned that we are supposed to be here in a very short space of time. So I couldn't really make that request, but I would have preferred them to be here because we are having a program that is set at looking at all problems that we're experiencing. I will touch on to them. There are reports as well that have been compiled, which which the department is definitely going to forward to the portfolio committee for looking at in as far as assessments, that is the latest assessments that have been done in terms of the infrastructure and the operational network in this island. And then getting into the presentation, next slide. Honourable members will remember that what came to be in the public space was first raised on the 7th of January this year in an article that was entitled "The Iceman Coming with an Axe," where a number of issues around the base itself and the plight of people, fellow South Africans that are conducting research in there, were experiencing. And the manner with which it was presented was so appalling, and that led into a situation where the portfolio committee has to call us and to account as to what is actually going on, which was on the 6th of February. And issues that were raised in unstable team members, critical food shortages, faulty generators, and a wide range of conflict between two team members that was detailed. We, as the department, and in particular the branch Oceans and Coast, we are saying that yes to some of the things that happen, but others are blown out of proportion. And those that are, that we feel the explanation given on or what has been said about, they are real problems that we are attending to. And it is so unfortunate that perhaps at the time that they were made to be known to the public, we were doing things behind scenes, taking appropriate action, which I'm definitely going to explain in my presentation. And at the same time, what we also wanted to say is a person that not necessarily attacking the person, but rather to say at the back of our minds, whilst you were reading that article that came on the 7th of January, and the second one that followed on the 26th of August, which is the same person, at the back of our minds, we were also cognizant of the fact that he's the same person that had a problem with the Department of Environmental Affairs in the past, that was taken to the press ombudsman, who was found to be really guilty in the past. So whilst we are taking responsibility of issues that were put to the fore, at the back of our minds, whilst we are looking into the detail of the presentation, we also took that into consideration.
Who is that person?
It's the journalist, Honorable Chair, Mr. Bobby Jordan, who has written those two articles, the one in January and the one that was published on the 26th of August in the national newspaper.
Okay, so while the base instinct, Maroon Island, still translated.
Yes, Honorable Chair.
It was taken to
the press ombudsman
on those two articles.
No, not on those two articles, but the way he deals with the department, because if we are looking, Honorable Chair, even in the detail of what he has presented, then there are issues that are not necessarily correct. In as far as we know them as the department are concerned.
So you took him to the ombudsman on...
No, it was a previous incident. I will provide the details of that incident. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We felt as a team that perhaps it would be proper to give that slide where we are indicating how the base our layout is, that is the new base layout in Marion Island, so that when we talk about problems in various parts and interventions there in various parts of the base, at least there will be a picture as to where about are those problems and encounters. As you may see, the accommodation blocks and then the technical block, which is one of the areas where there has been serious problems reported in as far as generators are concerned. So they are housed in that, and then the diesel tanks are just across the creek on the other side, which you'll be able to see them in the next slide. And when offloading using the helicopter, that is where the helicopter will put the cargo, and then forklifts will take it into the building. Next slide. Yes. Some of the areas that have been said to be having problems is the helicopter hangars, and of course close to the new base, and as I've already alluded to, that's where the fuel tanks are, and then lines run from there to the new base. And then there's the old base, which is awaiting decommissioning because of some of the hazards that exposed to the environment and also to people that are at the base. But it's something that is work in progress at the moment. Next slide, please. the summary in the actual text of issues that were raised by the portfolio committee for the department or for the branch in particular to respond to, in line with what was also, in, as I've already alluded to, in the public space. And with recruitment and selection processes, we've responded to that. And screening protocols, we've been consulting. And team leader selection communications, we've responded to that, and as I'll explain, and food shortages, medical support, medical supplies, equipment and health risk, and the general maintenance of the base. But before moving on to the next slide, I wanted to make mention of the fact that with the screening protocols, in as far as the consultation with professional people in the sector, there were kind of, many things that they said, but I would narrow it down maybe to one or two. And it is linked to what we've been working on. If we compare the South African National Antarctic Program, for example, with the Australian Antarctic Division, within the Australian Antarctic Division, you will find that there is the Polar Medical Unit, where doctors sit, and then other supporting professionals also sit. In South Africa, we don't have that. And which is why we were also considering having a doctor that will be employed by the department, because the way it happens now is we will employ medics for the bases and accept the Sinai base, which is in Antarctica, we will have a medical doctor. And there are a number of reasons why we were maybe doing it like that. We also had an MOU with the Tumil Hospital. With the Tumil Hospital then assisting us with medically related matters. So we wanted to move away from that because personnel challenges on one side leads to us not getting most of the support that ordinarily we would have loved to have. Also considering the fact that if we are dealing with Antarctica, if we're dealing with the sub-Antarctic islands, we're talking about remote islands. We're talking about a remote continent if we're talking about Antarctica. So it becomes very much, it becomes critically important, therefore, that we have medical support on standby. And our consideration, in as far as internal discussions are concerned, we're looking at a doctor who will have over and above the basic MBCHD qualification, to have ATLS, which is Advanced Trauma Life Support, a person who will have occupational health, a person who will have advanced cardiac life support. So we are having those discussions internally to have a person like that. But as to the duration of the employee, the conditions of employment, and other things, those are matters that we are still developing and discussing, and with many considerations, because there are those professional bodies that they are registered to with certain conditions that when we are talking with them together with our HR, we need to find a way of bridging those gaps that may be there. So the reason why I'm bringing that one up is if we're talking about screening protocols, the screening protocols, on the surface, we'll be talking about, psychometric tests. But the advice that we got from the experts, as we are continuing to put pen on paper on this matter, was that there are different levels in the organization where you can do psychometric tests. If you are talking a strategic position, then you must do a psychometric test. But if you are talking a general workforce, you may not necessarily do a psychometric test. And the guidance that we also got was that there are three phases that they mentioned. I will try and remember them. That the basic medical testing that is done for whether to determine whether a person is fit for duty. And those basic medical tests that you do when a person is fit for duty, in fact, there's three categories: fit for duty, fit but with restrictions, and unfit. And then again, if you are looking at unfit, is it a person unfit permanently or temporarily? So if a person is fit, it's fine. But if the person is fit with restrictions, then those issues will be raised by the doctor as red flags to the department. And considering the fact that there is that clause that of confidentiality between the doctor and the patient. So we send them for medical screening to doctors to look into the lung function, to look into kidneys and liver functions, taking urine samples and blood samples and so on. But when it comes into the behavioral patterns of people, then one will say it's a psychometric test. The advice that we have at the moment is that there is a new method called the Minnesota Multiphasal Personal Index, MMPI, which then through the MMPI process, you are able to say the person given where you need to specify that the person is sent to a remote area, then the test can be done along those lines. But if we're talking psychologists, and then maybe at one level they're talking psychiatrists, then you have your doctors that will do the basic test. You need to have that person employed by the department. That is what we're trying to do now. Because what we were advised on was that if then you are going to be investigating if a person is of a sound mind when he or suitable to go out there in terms of how he or she behaves, then it will be an out of phase because it is outside of the scope of the basic medical testing that you must do. So we are working on that. It's work in progress in as far as the screening protocol, because there are those considerations that we must do. And going on to the next slide, when it comes into employment of people, that is how it used to happen in the department, that is prior 2012, where if you're looking into all those actions, for instance, and the case in relation to the basis, it was we would have a lead of 7 months. And the reason why it was done like that, the information I got was because when people apply, or when the department sends out an advert for a position in any of those bases, response from public in terms of application is very low. And at best of times, you will find a person who will agree that, you know, I am going to Antarctica, only to find that 2 months down the line, there are other reasons that will cause him or her to say, no, I'm no longer going. So that you can still have time to work on that. And it is at the time that the Southern Oceans and Antarctic Support Directorate had their own HR people inside the directorate. But now, after centralization, that has changed. And can you please move to the next slide? Okay. So the positive aspects of that was that people were employed by the department, and then they would sign contracts with the department, and which means that they were the employees of the department, and the HR policies that would apply to them were the HR policies of the department. And now that there has been that decentralization, now that certain organizations and institutions like your South African Weather Services or the universities themselves employing people, now HR policies that are applicable to people are those that are from those institutions. So you will have maybe out of 20, a group of 20 people sitting at Marion Island, you will have four that are directly employed by the Department of Environmental Affairs that are therefore subjected to all the policies and rules and regulations of the department. Others will be coming from other organizations and then therefore being subjected, as I said, to the policies as applicable to those departments. Yeah, thanks, Mike. What perhaps is reflected in this slide is what I've already touched base to, but But I would like to also talk about evacuation in as far as the island is concerned. Whilst the HR policies, as I've mentioned, are still for HR policies for people that are all HR policies that are applicable to various groups of people, when it comes into evacuation, it is still the responsibility of the Department of Environmental Affairs. And it is starting this year whereby we have an MOU with DST to say that people should or organizations should have medical insurance, because when we are talking evacuation, those claims will be processed through their medical insurance. Next slide, please. There has been an outcry about food shortages, and that people were starving in there. The department is also sending, insufficient food supplies for the duration that people are staying there. Well, there has been, between the two parties, if you may, I'd like me to say that, honorable members, from the side of the department on one side, and then from the side of the expeditioners, expeditioners will blame the department, and the department will say that, no, but it's not proper management of food that is the result that we are seeing it's you not properly managing the supplies, because what has been the practice there, which when we dig deep into it, it was meant to ensure that there is closer knit group whereby people will be sent and be trained to cook or to cooking lessons before being deployed, so that they take turns in cooking. So when this came up, although that may have been premised on say the good of the program, as the time move forward, looking at the groups that are there now, we moved from a situation where you will excuse me to say this, but that's how it has been. To move from a situation where it has only been one race group that has been there, to be accommodative of everyone that is a South African. And the second aspect of it is that the age groups, instead of being, say, 35 and above, with that bracket of 35 to 40 being maybe at the lower end, but in the middle end you have the 40s to the 50s and then the above, now you have 34 to 28, mostly as the bulk of people that are in there. And and they are coming in from different backgrounds. So you have cultural differences, you have young people, and hormone levels, I'll say, very high, which is, and then you have a limited group of people, and a few ladies, many male, and it's a perfect environment for conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Conflicts will arise out of situations like that. So that is that is what we've come to realize with that. But there are factors that are leading to that. One of those is unemployment, because with unemployment in the mainland, when you have a Bachelor of Science degree with environmental sciences, and there is an opportunity to be an environmental control officer in Marion Island, where you will be paid a salary without maybe spending it for 12 months or 14 months, then it sounds like a perfect opportunity for you to be able to take care of yourself. So then you have that band of people. So the intervention that the department has made when it comes to that, and we'd like to thank our Director General for listening to us and understanding our where we come from when it comes to that, was to employ a professional chef, one or two. And our considerations were that the professional chef should be paid at maybe salary level 12. For two reasons. One, if you are looking at the amount of money that they spend in their training, it's a lot of money, not less than 300,000 rand to train as a professional chef. And secondly, the long hours, because it is not about getting the plate of food. It is about preparations that go into that. So because they are working longer hours than anyone else who is in the island, and in preparation of food, developing menus, making it a point that, as outlined in the slide, that nobody comes back or we don't have to go there and evacuate people because they have listeriosis or there's salmonella that they got from frozen foods like chicken and so on. So those people are trained as food technicians and to prepare menus and so on. So we are happy as well to say that when we went back to Marion Island for the emergency voyage in May, we took one chef in there who will be able to manage stocks of food accurately, and the stock rotation, as I've mentioned, is top on his agenda, and food that is prepared according to with sensitivities taken into consideration, like people that are having certain allergies to certain types of foods. So at least on that one, I would say as a department, we've been able to take care of it. And moving forward, that is how we are going to proceed, that in all the following voyages and expeditions, we'll have a cook in Marion. There's a difference between a cook and a chef, I was told. So we'll have a chef instead of a cook. A cook is a person like myself. Thank you. As I've already indicated, there were issues that were raised about generators failing, people using cold water, and water not clean in the base. And then we started discussions with the Department of Public Works. And with the discussions that we've had with the Department of Public Works, we started early April. And unfortunately, we were unable, because what we were intending to do is that since there is no port infrastructure at Marion Island, the vessel will be offshore, say, by about 3 nautical miles. And when it is there, it is running on all engines, so consuming the fuel. So what we were planning on doing was to make it a point that because the amount of money that we would have spent staying there, the vessel, was going to be a slight difference between the amount of fuel, between the amount of money that we would have spent steaming back to South Africa to get those generators. But the discussions and the getting the generators ready and all other equipment took a bit longer, and as a result, letters that were signed between the two parties, between the DPW and DIA, where between the 30th of April and the 3rd of May this year, which then led into us waiting for the takeover party to conclude what they were doing and then come back with those that were going to be taken home from the island, including the warring parties, as I've indicated in my earlier slide. And one of our discussion points was that going back to Marion Island, the Department of Public Works will take two generators, a 1250 kVA and a 100 kVA. The 250 kVA is the one that can run the base effectively well, and it talks to the needs of the base. And then 100 kVA as a backup in case of an emergency. And I would like to explain that with the generators that they were taking to Marion, they are not new generators. I would like to explain that. And I would like to mention that rather, honorable members. And what they said to us in our discussion was, there is going to be a process of requesting new equipment for the base, not only generators. And that is going to hinge on reports that are going to be compiled by a group of experts from both departments. So during the emergency voyage, we took those two generators and we took spare parts to repair those that were in the island and see those that were not going to be repairable so that they are taken there. Remember, honorable members, we earlier on mentioned a triple fail safe kind of a generator arrangement. So we wanted to continue with that. So going down to Marion Island for the emergency voyage, we took those generators. One had about a couple of hours running, and then the other has been used before. So on the 25th of May, then they installed the Scania generator, which is the 250 kVA, and then on the 28th of May, the 100 kVA was also installed in there. Next slide. The Perkins generators are the ones that have always been in the island, and with spare parts, as I've mentioned. The team that went there was able to repair two of the Perkins as indicated in that slide, and one they made a recommendation that of the two Perkins that were repaired, one it should be safe to be used during emergency conditions, because of some of the problems that it had, they were unable to resolve them. In particular, the issue of consuming more oil. Next. The Stamford generator and another Dutz generators were taken off the island and they were brought back to Cape Town, so that if they are able to be repaired, they can be repaired and sent back. If they can't be repaired, that they are scrapped. But having said that, there is also that undertaking that new generators will be bought, not only for Marion Island, but for other places as well. The other complaint that was raised was the issue of the integrity of the fuel line and the mechanism of pumping that is linked into the tanks. And as I've shown in the previous slide, it is across the creek where, for safety reasons, it's away from the base. That in case that there is fire, it's not close to the base. So they found that there were leaks in it. They cleaned those leaks, but they also recommended that there'd be extensive work that must be done, in particular by the next expedition to Marion Island. But like I said, honorable members, there are detailed reports on both the operational aspect of it and the structural integrity of both the base and other equipment that is definitely going to be forwarded to the portfolio committee. And we are continuing to engage on those matters, and on the 15th of August, we'll be having some final discussions about those issues that I've mentioned. 15th of August.
September 15th.
Okay. Sorry, thank you, Honorable Chair. And what they discovered there was how the base of the water line operated. That there was nothing faulty, just that there was a bypass valve that was open, and the valve that goes through filters was closed. And when they took the filters apart, they were also clogged, which means the takeover parties do not do what they're supposed to do, which is to take them apart and clean them. Now there is a procedure that they've developed, which is going to be utilized from Public Works when there is a takeover, that they go and clean those up. But the other thing that they found is that steel pipes have rusted a lot, and some of those must be taken off so that they can be stainless steel pipes that must be installed, and they are busy working on that. And in other areas where temperature is lost, it's because the covering, the insulation in the pipes, because of high winds in the area, has been blown off and it hasn't been replaced. So moving forward, those are the things that must be that are going to be done. One of the findings, which was very much alarming, and we continued to talk about it for a while, was the issue of fire alarms, which there are lines to the system that were cut, and in some parts because they were disconnected, and they found that it was not operational, and posing, I would say, a life threatening, so to speak, risk to people that are at the island. So that they have since been repaired, but there are one or two issues that they are still going to go back in the next voyage and repair, in particular in the science block. Now, going back to the incident of the X in Marion Island and the two gentlemen that were fighting. I was saying to a colleague this morning that I found myself thinking about a type 1 era and the type 2 era, where when you look at it both ways, you can either be right or wrong, depending on where you are standing as when you are looking at it. There were two considerations. The first consideration was when we heard about that, and when it seems to have been escalating, serious thoughts were given on removing them from the island. And work was done towards that. And the work that was done towards that was to talk to our service provider, which is AMSOR. And it is at the time that the vessel was going to come back from the International Indian Ocean Expedition 2. That is last year, in November. And honorable members would remember that between that voyage and the Sanai for voyage, which normally takes place between the 30th of November or the 1st of December, there were going to be a few days. So we had to consult with AMSOR to give us the best advice as to how do we get there quickly, how do we get there, I'll say, cost effectively. And then the advice that they gave us was that the vessel, when it docks in Devon, it can use current to go down to Marion Island and burn less fuel And the least amount of money that the department was going to pay for that was 2.1 million for that evacuation of those colleagues there. And then we contacted the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries and sought information about the border police people that we can talk to in here, because we're of the view that we don't know what's going to happen and we cannot leave it to the crew of the vessel or to some of our colleagues that will be on board the vessel. We'd rather leave it to the law enforcement officers to take them out, and we don't know what we are going to find when we get there. So, yes, we spoke to Captain Trata in here, who gave us, in Cape Town, who gave us a contact person in Pretoria. And to cut a long story short, we were able to get four police men deployed for that evacuation, and they were in there. But then there were other considerations. Perhaps the last point to make on that was, with our calculations, we also were able to determine that going to Marion Island, it was going to delay us by a day going down to Sana. And we worked out as to perhaps how we can recover costs from other operations that were still ahead of us. For instance, we run that is from Sanai to one of the British islands and so on. The other consideration was the financial situation. And then with the consideration of the financial situation, then what we've considered to be maybe the best intervention to remove colleagues from the island was surpassed by other considerations. Next slide. The consideration that was put in place was that we need to rather do a remote counseling. And a company was contracted to do that. I am not sure whether my colleague would like to come in on that and explain the processes that what happened with that.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable chairs, honorable members. Basically, what happened there was we resorted to the service provider by the name of Careways, who's contracted to the department for employee wellness. And we had a series of remote interviews with the parties concerned, and Careways basically issued reports on their findings for each of the colleagues that were assessed. And in the reports, there was no indication of anyone who displayed behavior that warranted immediate evacuation. And based on that, we actually took the decision not to proceed with the evacuation. And then on the 8th of December, after further interventions and further investigations, the accused, basically the ECO, he submitted a letter of apology to the department and also indicated or admitted to being guilty of having used the axe to damage the senior meteorologist's laptop. No? But the way the whole thing was reported when the incident came about. It was as though the person was being attacked with an axe. But that was clearly a misrepresentation, which we actually found out through the whole investigation process. And it was further found that the root cause of this whole debacle that took place was a love triangle that the two gentlemen were after the same lady. And there was an intention for one to get the other one out of the island so that he's basically out of the way. And a lot of the information or the way the reports came about actually exaggerated what actually happened. And we continued with our investigations and getting statements from the entire team, basically. I think what we also needed to mention was that this whole wellness program was open to basically the entire team. So anyone who felt that they had any concerns that they wanted to raise, they had the platform to do so. And then on the 22nd of February, there was another incident of sexual harassment allegation by one of the against the senior meteorologist, who was the person who claimed that he was being attacked with an axe. But upon further investigation, it was found that this guy, he actually tried to propose the woman about 6 months earlier, and she kept those messages. And then when they had an argument because she didn't do her work, and him being the supervisor, having charged her with not performing her duties, then she took out these messages and said that he is sexually harassing her. But anyway, she was... she was part of the weather service contingent. So the weather service was informed that, you know, there is this relationship breakdown. So what they did is they rearranged the shifts so that the two of them don't have to work together in the same office at the same time. And also agreed that when the ship arrives for the relief voyage, that she can actually be taken off the island and put onto the ship so the two of them don't have to engage each other. And then when the ship arrived, we had a welcome function as is usual, and DDG actually announced that we will have a briefing session with the team, with the entire team, so that we get to the bottom of the concerns raised. And this briefing session was held with the team and the research leaders. And basically, during that session, a lot of the concerns that were already alluded to were spoken about. And we had a set of recommendations between GST and GEA to make sure that we find lasting solutions to some of the concerns raised. And one of the concerns was the fact that you have scientists who are pursuing masters and PhDs and really have a career interest for being on the island, And then you have support staff who are there for the maintenance and sort of the enablers that are just there because they needed a job. And those were some of the concerns that were raised, and I think we spoke about the screening protocol as well. Can we move to the next slide?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And in conclusion, what we would like to say is that, that the branch options and Department of Environmental Affairs, we are really committed as a department in the improvement and of living conditions and working conditions in Marion Island. And there are several steps that were taken that have been taken by the department to see to it that we move towards that direction. And but another one that is worth mentioning is the fact that we've also realized that going back to what the DG also said in February about the change in leadership and the change in management at different levels and the change of personnel, where you find that certain skills and institutional memory has been lost, and that causes a wobble in an organization. And perhaps the way we've managed it, it hasn't been managed to a point where we are able to contain fully that kind of wobble. And in addressing that or responding directly to that, we looked into our own that have had an excellent service. For example, Mr. Henry Valentine, who was at the top or at the helm of our Antarctic program for a long time. And he has been with the program for something like 34 years, and he retired about 2 years ago. But when we noted this problem, we saw unfortunate that at the time that they suffered, it's when we were having those kinds of discussions, and he agreed to give us some of his time to look into our systems of procedure for various aspects of the work that we are doing so that we can be able to have a framework within which to move in and safeguard the program from going astray in certain areas where it shouldn't. And on top of that, we've mentioned that we are looking into the medical aspect, but there are countries that are working with us. We are in the same area, for instance, in Antarctica, that are miles ahead in terms of, say, telemedicine. I'll make an example of Germany, and it's one of the 11 countries that leave out of Cape Town when they are going to Antarctica. We are having talks with them, and Henry as well will use his own channel to assist us to get those in place. Questions that have been asked was, why you change something that is working and why you move away from something that works and to an environment where there are a lot of unknowns. Considerations are there that some of the things that we used to do as the government, in as far as the South African National Antarctic Program is concerned, we need to revert to those. But it's work in progress, as you speak. And enablers. For those, it's the partnerships that we have with departments, for instance, like DPW, and I'm really sorry to write 15 August, it's a mistake. But we are continuing with the engagement, and internally we are also considering having a centralized recruitment and contracting. Those are the things that we are working on. But we would like to say to the honorable members, we are doing everything that we can within law to address all the areas that are of concern in as far as the thank you.
Okay. All right. So I will see him. Maybe before that, let's find out. My apologies, I have to go out and take a phone call, it's a very important call. So maybe some of this thing you might have reflected on that. subsequent to that story about somebody with an egg, there was another one on the 26th of August by the same journalist that said was taken to the ombudsman. I don't know whether you suggest that because there was one story where he was taken to the ombudsman and therefore all the subsequent stories, you must take them with a pinch of salt because of the first one. I'm not sure, but let's engage with what was coming out of the article. The article says that there was a 9-page memorandum by scientists where they were raising their concerns. I just want to find out whether we have that memorandum, we can make it available to us, what are the issues raised in the memorandum. And then there was also an issue, you might have touched on it, about the shooting of the story. Because the allegation is that the warehouse which is here in Cape Town was impacted. There was some food stock that was stolen. It raises a lot of issues around security and around all such issues. Because food is a very important item when you go on this kind of expedition. The psychological screening, I think you touched on that and also mentioned in the article. Because it's something that came up in the past. So it's not that. As a result, you can take people who are not mentally prepared for the kind of environment. So, maybe just to continue more about such a thing. It also raised an issue around satellite communication, which fails. And of course, you quite spoke quite at length about transmission. I wouldn't want you to discuss that, but maybe just to give us an assurance. The generators are up. I can imagine without the generators there won't be work done. It's not like there is the Eskom line that is going there. So you rely on generators for energy. So what is the situation now? You're quite comfortable with that method being taken. Okay, those are the issues that are raised mainly in the article, except the fact that they are raising things about people's environment, what the conditions are for exit. The Honorable Speaker, I say your thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I also have comments and questions regarding the journalist who's been taken to the press ombudsman, if I understand correctly, by the department.
Correct.
Okay, so I just want to know, okay, first of all, I'd like to comment on the fact that he was found really guilty. I'd like to know what that means, now I'm teasing. And then you state emphatically that he was taken to the ombudsman for previous issues and it's got nothing to do with these articles. But that he exaggerated the facts in these articles, if I'm understanding you correctly. I'd like to know which facts they are and how he exaggerated it, apart from the fact that you said that the frying pan and the axe issue, which I think is completely nuts, he trashed a room, which was a quote. So he didn't trash the room, just the laptop issue. Okay. See, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I think if you can just explain to the committee in very short, like in short, you didn't trash the room, it was just the laptop, stuff like that. But I think that also links with what the chair asked about the second article as well. And then I also want to know whether you will be taking him to the ombudsman again. I mean, if these allegations are so ridiculous that he's made, I see straight away, but then why not? And it's, I'm not being funny. I mean, if he's putting the department in a bad light, or lying in a good way, or in a bad way, I don't know how you say it, about those things. Then on the, you said that there's medics on the island currently. I'd like to get clarity. You said that there's a medic on Marion Island, and then there's a doctor that goes to Antarctica. I'd like to know whether the medic on Marion Island is a medic or a paramedic. And then furthermore, I'd like to know whether what his or her qualification needs to be. Also experience, specifically regarding to the years that this person has been practicing. Because clearly, I mean, it's very remote, it's a very specific environment. Does this person, for example, if someone gets bronchitis or someone gets listeriosis or something, will this person be able to help until help arrives? Now, what I'd like to know specifically towards the qualifications, I'd like to know whether this person is either a basic life support, intermediate life support, or advanced life support medic or paramedic. And I'd like to know whether they qualified via the previous short courses or the BTEC four-year degree. Then with regard to the generators, you said that the ones that went, those two, they're not new. I'd like to know how old they were, and I'd like to know where they came from before you took them to the island. I'd also like to know whether they're going to stay there, both of them, permanently. You mentioned something like that, but I can't remember now that I asked the question. So please, just if you can tell me that. And then the Perkins generators, the two and the three. I'd like to know, why did they break in the first place? Was it lack of maintenance? Or is it they're very old, or you know, stuff like that. And also why you didn't foresee them breaking. The bulk diesel, you said there was you mentioned something about leaks. I'd like to know what was done about the leak, not so much the valves, but specifically where did it leak into? Did it leak into the soil? Did it leak into the ocean? You didn't really explain the leak. If you can just give us some more information around that, a little bit more details, would be appreciated. And then my last issue, Chairperson, is water. If I'm not mistaken, both articles mentioned something about the water, but specifically like warm water, the hot water issue or something. Okay, the specific question that I put in there, and it's more tongue in cheek, well, probably not really that much. Why the hell would you install steel pipes next to an ocean on the bike? Everybody knows humid, wet, ocean weather, steel rust. Why? This is a fairly new base. I know nothing about building, but that's like one of the things I know. Who did this? Why did they do it? I mean, if you're going to tell me it's public works, please give us some more information. Because does this mean that there's other things on the base that we might need to start looking at? Because, you know, it could go wrong. Looking into the future, planning. Okay, I'll stop there for now. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Hello, Peter.
Thank you, Chair.
Mine are a few practical questions.
My colleague has covered a few of them, but just on the generators, I'm struggling to understand why the budget doesn't allow for replacement of generators, and that we have to rely on patching old ones. I'm really struggling with that. Such a vital piece of equipment, and we have to patch old ones. So if someone can just give us clarity on that. The fuel, we've seen the pictures of the fuel, but what concerns me, and I'd like to know,
it's all stored in one space. So if we have a fire or an explosion there, is there spare fuel stored somewhere else? Because you could have a long time for a boat to get to you if all of that goes up, boom, in one. So is there spare fuel anywhere on that, complex? The water, I just would like to know, where does it come from? Is it desalinized? How does the water come? Where does the water come from? And at the same time, sewage. No one's ever spoken about sewage. Just explain what systems are used, if you may. And heating. Is the heating only from generators, or do you use solar, or the other forms of heating? And coming to the mental aspects, you know, this is not the first time that countries have sent people to remote places. I mean, you mentioned the Germans have done good work. I mean, NASA sent astronauts into space for a very long time in a much smaller space than an island. So surely we can learn from other countries on the mental aspects of this when we do our selection. So please, if you could have some comments around that.
Okay. Sauna. Yeah, I'm not sure about the sauna. The thing is raining every second day.
Whatever they use.
I doubt if they it will work. Okay.
Wind is whatever.
Or wind, yeah. Maybe wind. Okay. Honorable.
I'm sorry. Information, but which was following on your statement as well, that the two generators have failed and the third one is going to fail as well. Almost like it's known and it's a guaranteed one. And the issue will be what is going to be done about that. Because it's known, we can't wait until the point when it's going to be failing. But firstly, just to now appreciate the report. Remember, this report is coming as a result of the other that we said was not responding to what we wanted. And we should not just condemn all the time. When you come with a report, like the people to say that the response or the presentation now is improved, and I think yourself do know that it's different from the other you presented last time. So we're thankful of that. I want to proceed to your slide 20 on conclusion. Raising firstly the second bullet and third. For me, in terms of the organogram, I'm not sure who's managing the team now. But you're saying now you have been appointed a person with 34 years of experience who's going to develop and is appointed for 12 months. Is going to be developing some framework of what needs to be done and so on. I thought some of the challenges, in as much as the framework will be assisted, it's not about the framework, it's more about how they are managed when they are there. Like that, every time the person who leads them there is critical to manage the situation. You can't just give people a framework and hope they will manage themselves, it will be fine. I think the person who will see to it that the framework is properly implemented will be key. But the fifth bullet is that you're considering reverting to the initial way of handling things, because at that point you did not have quite a lot of health challenges. I'm not sure whether the challenges were not there or they were not reported, they were not elevated. I'm not sure, and I doubt if there were no problems at all. But now that they are being exposed, and whether they are exaggerated or what, that's another point. But the issue is, now, there is somebody who exposes us, or some people who expose, and you are able to look at those particular things. It's something that you might not have shared with us, exactly what used to be done in the past, but ensure that there were no challenges, or if there were, they were minimal. You did, of course, explain to the age cause of some people or brackets, which on its own necessitated this kind of challenges and so on, which is understandable, I think. And equally, because it's experts, it's people who go there for research and study and pursuing particular careers. You can't take people in pairs there. You can't measure them. And so one male, female, it's not political consideration when we come to parliament. Some parties will want to ensure that there's some 50-50 in our parliament is constituted. So there, you need to consider passion of individuals in terms of what they want to pursue. And so, you are going to sit with some of these things for some time. And just the last point here, clear way, if I got the name correct. It's like they give their own input, and because they're professionals, you believe it. Either because you might not have got other serious problems. But the point I want to raise, I'm not contesting what they did with your product. But I'm just saying probably because they were not appointed to deal with this problem. Whether they were fit for purpose and so on is something else. I thought you needed to do an extra job on it, not just believe in what they said, simply because your problem seemed to be resolved. You may still need to do, perhaps the expert who has got this 74 years experience will be useful after developing that system of procedure. Perhaps it will be one part of handling the situation, going an extra way to get more beyond what the clear way has done. What I don't think they assisted in terms of what needed to happen going forward. It was just to deal with the current situation, the personnel, the person who are people involved. Thank you. It's more comments that I want from you.
Department? Who's going to start with this one?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will take some of the questions, Honorable Chair, and then Judy will take some as well, and Nish as well. With your permission, Chair. I'll start with the memorandum. Yes, we do have the memorandum, Honorable Chair, and it will be made available to you, Chair, as you requested that it be made available. That is the memorandum from the PR, the principal investigator, that is the site. We did have, I'll say, a response to some of the things because they forwarded it to the department. But the other thing that perhaps I would like to mention on the message is that we were also doing our own internal work, for instance, taking it
a bit further from what they are raising, because I'm not sure where to start when it comes into how we are dealing with the matter. Perhaps it will help to say some of the things that they raised. We were of the view that perhaps we needed to have an engagement, more engagement with them. That those are the things that there may be different views on. But I'm really struggling to. There's another matter that is linked to this, which is the content of that memorandum are by and large what is the bulk of what is said in the article. And with the department not having perhaps released it to the media, because we have a view that we are engaging as partners, because they are our partners. But once we were discussing, then it found itself to the media. And in the past, we've looked into our relationship, and Judy is working with the Department of Science and Technology to try and so that we can be able to iron out some of the differences. But they are not new. And then we were also looking into that matter, because there is an article, for instance, that was published in the South African Journal of Marine Sciences when the South African Agalas, the SA Agalas II vessel was delivered. The view that scientists had, which the department has to respond to, because it was a bit harsh, to say the least about it. And then the exercise that we are currently doing, because we don't really understand fully the interest that the scientists have in as far as what the department needs to do. So given that, the exercise that we are doing, we are looking into the scientists themselves who are participating in the South African National Antarctic Program. How long have they participated in there? Their students. The students that they've produced over the years, we are busy putting all that information together. And over and above that, the grants that they've received from NRF, and because, Honorable Chair, there are issues that we have in our minds about why some of the things are really blown out of proportion, taken out of context. But as soon as we are done with that, it will be made available. But we are busy working on that information. And shortages of food. We used to have a model that was developed by Tumil Hospital. That model was about provision to the islands and to Antarctica. And it was specifying quantities versus the numbers of people that were in there. If, for instance, we're talking about breakfast, what needs to go into food that is going down there for breakfast for all those people. And that model over the years, because the numbers have changed and preferences have also changed, it's not as fitting as it was. Then it needs to be revised. But whilst we are looking at how we are going to revise the model that was used so that it conforms to the present day needs, in as far as the island are concerned, then we are having chefs, professional chefs in place. That when we are procuring food, then they will be able to advise a food committee that we had to establish within the department at the beginning of this year, or no, towards the end of last year. So the chef and the food committee, working with the service provider that is procuring all these supplies for these islands or for our bases, then they are taking care of the quantity. And we haven't received any queries thus far from, or any further requests, for example, of complaints from SANAI since we started last year. So then we did it again with Marion. You would remember, Honorable Chair, that there was also complaints about food in the huts now, not necessarily even in the main base. We've also looked into that. We said, okay, we had this model. For now, let us use it and see where we are falling short in terms of the amount of food where we were would exceed by, say, about 20%. And we let's do that because it was the basis of supply of food in the basis, which over the past couple of years we've done away with it. But now we've since reintroduced it. So far we haven't received any complaints or comments that are to the contrary in terms of food being availability of food. I fully understand that at the moment maybe it's still early days in as far as Marion is concerned, but as I said, SANAI, no problems, 6 months down the line, and Marion, we are hopeful, and going to Gov, we will use the same approach. Generators that failed.
What the food
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps colleagues will come in there, but what I could remember that was stolen from our stores here was liquor. And it was liquor that was for colleagues that are from Norway, the Norwegian expedition. Because when we go down to SANAI, we have arrangements with Norway. We are doing research on seabeds together and so on. Then we will take their cargo, drop it off at Bouvet Island, and then proceed to SANAI. And do our way back. On our way back, we will go via Bouvet Island to Cape Town to pick them up. So my recollection is that some alcohol items were stolen from their cargo. I am not sure about food. Perhaps colleagues will assist me with that one. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Chair, I think just on that one, it is important to mention that we in fact installed cameras, security cameras, in the warehouse. In the warehouse at East Pier, which is where the SA Gallus 2 is docked, and which is where all the loading takes place from. So we have also very seriously tightened the security measures, any kind of entry and exit security measures. Into the warehouse. From what we can see, if there was a pilfering problem, which we were informed about, or there was an alleged pilfering problem, from what we can see, the security measures and the cameras are having the necessary positive effect.
Thanks, Julian. And Honorable Chair, when it comes to theft of items, people that are working in that warehouse are people that have been with the program for a while now, even much longer than me being in the department. They started with some in the 90s, and they have been doing that. And there has never been any report on stealing of food items in there. But I don't want to seem to be putting blame onto someone, but colleagues will remember that the incident where there was stolen items was, for instance, in SANAI, there was an intern that was working in the department. And the intern, we later learned, after investigation, that there were things that he was stealing from the department and selling those like clothing items to some people or some friends at an institution, at one of the institutions of higher learning around Cape Town. And that came to the fore because when the vessel went down to Antarctica, he stole from the expedition members' cell phones, which were later found, and some cigarettes, and he apologized. So that stealing of liquor items, unfortunately, the way the human mind works would be, you would be thinking about those stolen items, that is liquor items, that they also happened with him around. Because he would stay.
Let's not spend more time. I think it's clarified.
Thank you very much.
No question. Let's go to the next one and the next one.
The generator that failed, are we comfortable that they are not going to fail? At least that's the kind of assurance that we got from our colleagues from the Department of Public Works, because they are the custodians of maintenance and provisioning of items like that. So when they assured us that at least, for instance, the Scania engine has only been run for a couple of hours in its entire life, so it did not. The configuration in terms of exhaust systems, and I'm not an engineer, but they explained it to me that they will have to change the exhaust system, and then they will have to manufacture certain parts so that the toxic fumes are diverted elsewhere. And so then they did that when they went down. They took the almost new engine with them, and even the 100 kVA one is a relatively new. Because they said that in the space of time that they have, they must raise new projects, and those new projects that they are going to raise will include procurement of new generators. So the two that they sent down are relatively new, and the old ones that are there, that the Perkins, can still be usable. I'm not sure if they will last, but at least they have high hopes, and they have kind of assured us that with the equipment that is there now, they are quite certain there's that high level of comfort in them that it's going to last the entire year, and that when the next overwintering team is taken down, there will be some new equipment to put in the fortress.
Okay. I'll respond to the satellite communication. The satellite communication basically works similar to DSTV. In bad weather conditions, you get what is called rain fade, and you lose the communication. It's inherent in the technology. Hence, the satellite communication does get lost from time to time, but we do have some redundancies where we have what is called HF communication as well. So because of accessibility, like when the communication is lost, then the internet connectivity would be lost. But in terms of us being able to communicate with the team leader, there's still a means to do that, but it's not made available to every single person because of the need for only using that during emergencies. Then in the case of the sewage, there was a question regarding the fuel. Indeed, there is just one bunker location, and there's 18 tanks, basically 9 on either side, separated from each other. So the way it was designed was they feed independently, so if the one has to have a fire or explosion or whatever, the other can still continue providing the fuel. But on the base elsewhere, we don't have other coal or diesel fuel. We just have at the huts we have the solar power. There was a question regarding solar power. On Marion Island, there's a lot of sensitivity about wind power. We investigated that, but we were cautioned because of the bird population. The birds fly into the propellers. So basically, the Prince Edward Island Advisory Committee totally is against having any wind power generation. In terms of...
So you've got solar?
We have solar, yes.
Oh, okay.
But a limited solar power.
So maybe you must take what Honorable Pedder was saying, if I'm not right. If anything were to happen to those tanks, you completely run out of fuel. So I guess the advice is in order to say you get the ultimate way of storing fuel in case of emergency.
Indeed, I think we will definitely have to take that up as well with our colleagues in public works. The other matter was with regards to how the sewage is handled. Basically what happens is there is a procedure during high seas that the sewage is released into the ocean. But it's only during high sea conditions. It's been found to have the least environmental impact.
How is it treated?
How is it?
Do you have some small treatment plants?
Yes, we have a sewage treatment plant at Marion Island, as well the question about desalination. We have desalinated water supply at Marion Island.
Yes, as I said, the other source of it is the dam. There's a dam there with a pipeline that is about 2.4 kilometers. And I also wanted to respond to the question of Honorable Steen about why steel pipes. Honorable, you are maybe going to get the report because there are many of those things. Steel pipes, and you are correct to say that oxidation, when it comes to iron, then it is likely to happen, and it results into those oxides. But it's one of many things, because in the reports or in the articles, you find that there are leaks that are reported that are bad, to such an extent that certain areas are not habitable. And then if you go back, you'll find that those leaks were there even when the base was commissioned. And now with the team that went there to investigate, as part of the report, they are reporting those issues. Like, for instance, with the base, it needs more bracing. So that when there are high winds, there is a high level of movement, which is not necessarily making it comfortable for people that are inside. So those things are not reported. But the technical experts that went there came with that, and the recommendations that more bracing. The other, without spending more time, is windows. It's double glazed windows. But those double glazed windows, what they have found is that there are those that will crack, and within the crack, water will seep in. As it seeps in, then it causes discoloration of the glass. So with that discoloration, that means that the window pane must be removed. But the problem is that in the structure itself, windows are cemented directly to the panel. There is no frame, window frame. Because when there is lateral movement, I'm not an engineer, like I said, I'm not a thinker.
But the explanation given is that with the lateral movement of the building, that is what is causing those windows to crack. So then, moving forward, we need to put in those frames and then put the windows in. So that is one of the reasons why when it comes into the pipes now, we see that, okay, it's stainless steel to prevent that that rusting. Yes.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, I think just four other points to try to wrap up on I think some of the questions that still remain. On Honourable Purden's question around the budgeting and why do we not take brand new generators there? There is a planning and a budgeting process between the department and the Department of Public Works. And in the same manner that we have to motivate the Treasury, DPW has to motivate the Treasury. So depending on what budget is available, it's a case of planning in terms of the current status of the generators or the age of the generators and a cycle of replacement of those generators. So that was the one point. There was a question that Honourable Makubele raised around using CareWays. The wellness team of service providers, psychologists that are available to the department in providing wellness support to officials, and whether we were correct to only rely on the view of the experts from CareWays. We had in fact also sourced an opinion from the medic based at Sanai, who is a very experienced person. So we did also have that view and expertise and analysis of the situation. But I think what we are trying to do now, in terms of really strengthening availability and rapport with psychological expertise on the mainland, is that during the training program to really encourage expeditioners to have a one-on-one session with a psychologist that is attending the training together with the expeditioners, so that there is in fact already a rapport built with the wellness counselors and psychologists, so that expeditioners don't feel alone, at a loss. There is psychological support in the event of isolation being experienced in a very severe way by expeditions. I think the other point that Mr. Sikidolo raised was about bringing bringing some expertise in the form of Mr. Valentine, who has run the SANAP program for many years, and certainly Honourable Makubele, you've raised the question, well, some things worked then, conditions have changed. And part of this process is really to analyze what is working well, what is not working well, why is it not working well, what needs to be changed. So it's using his expertise, but it's also recognizing that there are new circumstances that we are dealing with now in terms of composition of the team, age of the team, etc. And then finally, Honourable Chair, in terms of the conversation with the Department of Science and Technology, as Mr. Sikidolo indicated, the scientists come from academic institutions, and those academic institutions have a direct relationship in many instances with the Department of Science and Technology and with the National Research Foundation. So the conversation is to clarify where there are roles that can be played to improve conditions by the different organizations, by ourselves as Department of Environment, by Department of Public Works, by the Department of Science and Technology, by the National Research Foundation, and by the principal investigators who are responsible for the scientists and the scientific work that is taking place. So it's strengthening the conversation between the different workers. We recognize that it's an ongoing process. We are, we need to learn from the experience of other countries that have people in remote locations. We're never going to have the perfect solution, but it's an ongoing process of improvement.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to add on to the last point that Julie has mentioned, learning from other people. There are different organizations that South Africa is party to. For example, COMNA, which is the Council for the Managers of National Antarctic Programs. And two is DROMLAND, which is a drawing mode land, where we have we have bases with Russia, with India, with Norway, and So what I'm trying to say is that there are those platforms where certain papers that they have researched, certain behavioral patterns will be presented and engaged with them, so that we can be able to tap onto the experts that are doing those type of research to look into our programs as well. And I'll say that that is also working for us in terms of avoiding reinventing the wheel, but rather to address those particular problems that we may face at any given time.
You will answer the question about what part of the two stories do you find that they are not accurate? You understand Honorable Steenkamp's question?
Thank you.
You talked about the journalist who has been taken to the office.
The response to Honorable, thank you, Honorable Chair. The response to Honorable Steenkamp is that we are not going to take him to court, because our view is that it is always good to kind of offset a public discourse, and for the department to be kept on its toes in terms of what we are doing. It's a good thing. Sometimes it gets closer to be personal, which is not what we are appreciative of. But there are those issues about relationships within the department. Those are not necessarily accurate, and it's issues that we cannot necessarily respond to. We kind of focus on the business of the day in as far as what we do, and see where we can improve, and see where we feel that we are doing fine, but they a different opinion.
Come again, what are you saying? You seem to be saying a lot of things, but we can't really pinpoint what the great guy is saying.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
The question is, you say the journalist was taken to the ombudsman, not to court, to the ombudsman, for the story that he wrote in the past. Yeah. And then there are two other stories that was written, which some aspect of it you find that is not true. Now the question is, which specific part of the story are not true? And you intend to take that journalist again to the ombudsman, not to court. You mentioned court and
the ombudsman.
Yes.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Honorable Steenkamp did mention one of the issues. For instance, trashing someone's room with an X. It was not the room, it was the laptop.
That is something that you've already said. That we know. It was said by the gentleman next to you. He said, what other aspect of the story? Or you are not in a position to say?
Honorable Chair, we can compile that list, and because there are those issues that we've tabled down, but we can forward it to your office, Honorable Chair. But we've noted them, the inaccuracies as I indicated.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
because because one of the issues is people that resigned within the department because they had bad relationships with other people that are still in the employ of the department. And that certain people are the ones that are taking the program down the drain. But those are the things that we feel are very sensitive. But on top of that, they are not necessarily actual.
Yeah, I don't know what you know. There was the issue about the journalist during the colloquium, and I had to clarify it. You know, sometimes they would irritate. Especially those who are occupying public offices, yourself, as officials, like the executive, the minister, the DS, even ourselves as parliamentarians, we ask questions to the government. Now, what do you have to do? Just be factual. Because normally they will ask you, they will send you a list of questions. Say this and this and this and this. That remains factual. So that even after publishing of the story, you can be able to say this one is not true, this one is true, this one is not true. You see, unlike just say some aspects of the story are not true. I mean, you are not giving us details because we do read the story. As public representatives, we depend most of the time on the media to surface some of the issues. Had it not for that article, for instance, you would not be here. You understand? We picked up that there are issues at the Marion Island and we wanted to. Now, it would be incorrect for us to accept a scenario where. For instance, the person who wrote that article gets ravished in the process. To say, don't listen to what this person says, because at some point, this person was taken to the ombudsman and was found not to be telling the truth. When we were relying on the story that that person wrote, which story is now becoming 90% correct, as it were, except, you know, they will always exaggerate. That's a small thing like an egg, like threshing and all that. So it is our duty here to make sure that those who are not able to have a voice in this meeting must be defended. Especially if issues are raised in this platform, we must be able to do that. But my advice going forward, try to be as objective as possible and truthful when it is in the media. They will raise issues, must respond to them. When they do something that is wrong, when they publish information that is incorrect, you also have the right of reply. And you can send out that information to say, but they were wrong in this and this and this and this and this. Without fighting. Without tackling the person, then dealing with the issue.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. That is indeed what I tried to do in my opening statement when I raised that. That if we look into the article, for instance, the one of the 26th, that article is based on a memorandum that we or the document that was shared between the private principal investigators rather and the department. And those issues were clarified between ourselves and the principal investigator. But for some reason the document found its way to the gentleman and then maybe to press. He did consult with the department. And some of the issues were that he raised or he was asking were responded to by the department. So what I was saying, Honorable Chair, was that we are taking responsibility of issues that are raised that are about our work that we do, where we may be viewed as misheard, or where we may be viewed as that we haven't done our job as we are supposed to. We are taking full responsibility of that. But having said that, we are also wary of the fact that some of the issues will be taken out of context, and secondly, some of the things will be blown out of proportion. And that is human nature. It's like that. More especially with people that are in that profession.
What happened in the trade?
Yes,
in the trade, they inspire them a little bit.
Yes,
even with the headline, you know, you must put the headline in such a way that it's catchy. Then you read, and then you get to interact with the issues. Now, our responsibility must always be to clarify whatever that is out there. Because not everything that is written sometimes turn out to be correct. But we must pinpoint those things which are incorrect. I wanted to give you the last DM, but you can come in now.
Thank you. I just want to say that, Chair, it's also not always good to rely on media. But because you then become thirsty for information, you will then rely on the media. So what I'm trying to say, perhaps if this had been brought, this information that we are having, before the committee, you know, it could have been a different situation, because the committee would then have got your part of the story. So let's not make them thirsty for information, because then they will rely on the media. But also, I just needed to say, one must appreciate some of the work that is done by these scientists under these challenging conditions. And on the issue of unstable members of the team members, it's not very unusual. I mean, in a situation like this, it would be very common for them to be, you know, to be unstable. It's a pity, Chair, that people of my age are not very charming to be recruited in this type of environment. You know, people who are able to resist some of these practices, you know, because of age and experience. So, I really feel for these women. In the first place, they are young. Secondly, they are also limited as compared to men. So they become vulnerable. Hence, you get one sharing two members. It's a pity. It's not good. The issue of generators, I'm sure that could be attended to. It shouldn't be an issue. Food shortages, it could be attended to. It shouldn't be what you call a conflict between members, axes and pens, now used as weapons. I'm sure even that we could attend to that. But then, perhaps protocol, the issue of the protocol recruitment, perhaps that could help, but it could also not help, because it would be very difficult in that process to get a true reflection of that particular individual. Because some people are so vulnerable, they need work, so they will put on this good face. So it's also not an answer to the problems that we are facing. What is also just very interesting in knowing the budget that is kept aside for this type of work. That's a lot of work. Maybe not now, but just in our spare time, to be of interest. You know, it could be having also budgetary constraints. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DM. That's why I wanted you to give to be the last. Now you are closing. And I picked up that there were some few questions which were not answered.
we'll give you still the last bite that you have closed. But there's an issue about the medic from Honorable Skirigan, which I was responding to. There were some questions from Honorable Pedem, I think one or two was not responded to. Do you want to respond to the medic one? The medical doctor and the paramedic, the qualifications and all of that.
Okay, in Martin Island and Rock Island, we have the medical, what is called a medical orderly. It is not a paramedic. It is a person that either has a nursing degree or a diploma or nursing diploma. But a person must be having a advanced cardiac life support and advanced trauma life support. As well, the person schooled in remote or experienced in remote medicine. And as part of their training, because they a dental issue could arise, they are trained by two military hospitals on basic dental operations. So that's great. And the number of years experience that we take is more than 3 years.
Okay, are we done?
Chair, I think I'm covered.
You're covered?
Yeah, I'm covered. Yeah, I just touched my questions and they answered them.
Okay.
There's one outstanding with me.
Yeah.
I might have missed this, but did you answer the question on the diesel leak? Actually, where it leaks into within the soil, the ocean?
Okay, as part of the construction of the tanks and in complying with the health and safety regulations, there is what is called catchment bunds, and the diesel leaks in there, so it doesn't actually get into the environment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Parting shot.
Actually, said what I wanted to say, but just a plea from my side. Let's try and mend the relationship that seems to be killing itself. Just for the sake of the committee and the sake of the department as well. I would just make a plea, and I would also convey the same plea to the minister. Let's not make it to this balance. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. All right. On this issue, of Marwin Island, I think I must add on what the week was saying on the report. The report is there is a significant improvement from this the last report to this one. This one at least gives us the information that we are making. And I think we must commend you for doing that. And I know that it did not come, we did not receive the presentation on time on Friday. As is the norm, but I did get an SMS to explain that you guys are still busy. I don't know who was it from, or from you, yeah, to explain that you are working on it and you want to give us a proper report. And I think at least the report that we have is completely different from the last one. So we must commend you for that. But I think there's lessons to be learned from the few expectations that we have. And I think if we can attend to some of these things, we'll be able to have a very good expedition. We won't be dealing with the memo that you are receiving, and it can only be good for the benefit of the country. If you deal with the issue about food, it's a very important aspect of the expedition. People are there for long periods, so you can't have a situation where people are running out of food supply. I mean, it doesn't give a good image about preparation and planning. You know, you are taking so many people out on the expedition, they will be out there for so many months. You can estimate the kind of food stock that they will need. You can even make provision for more. And then they can always come back. So the issue of food, and I think you are attending to it by the chef, but the stock issue must always be properly attended to. Then there is the generator issue, which I hear that you are attending to them. But those things, they don't need us as a committee to come in and then to start looking to make sure that there's proper supply of energy to the base, because it must always be there. It's quite a vital and key component of the operation of the generator. And I think you must take to heart what Honorable Peden was saying about safety. You'll never know, these things can go up in flames because of the human factor. So you need to have at least an alternative supply of diesel to the generator, so that the generator must keep on going. I don't know what other precautions are taken in case there is fire there. Do we have a fire extinguisher? Is there a way of dealing with that situation? But those are the things that should be a priority in your list in terms of making sure that the generator. And of course, the human element, the interaction. You didn't answer my question about employing the services of a professional to select the people who are going on the expedition. Maybe you might have said it earlier, but the second time when I answer the question, you didn't respond to it. It's very important also to look at that. Select the participant carefully. I mean, somebody who has got an issue about interpersonal relations, ideally that person shouldn't go on an expedition like that. You spend months interacting with the people, and then if you are lacking in that department, you must be able to pick up the things early. When is the next boy expedition?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's this Thursday to Gulf Island.
This Thursday. So
yes,
all these elements you're talking about are taken care of.
We'll try to take care of them.
Okay.
Yes. Unfortunately, Honorable DM, it's already late for you this year. You may consider next year.
Okay. No, those are the issues I think that you are raising. But lastly, we were discussing, I don't know with you, but with committee members, about the possibility of doing an oversight in one of these islands. Marion, Gulf, Gulf, and then there's another one, Antarctica. The logistics of it might be quite complex, but that was an idea of wanting to do that. to go and look at the sea beds there. What is those beds? Okay?
Albatross.
Yeah. Because Dr. Preston presented something last week. But it was still at the conceptual stage. In fact, I didn't know why it was brought earlier. But it would be interesting to go there and see what is the actual situation. So maybe something that we can work on. We can still see if in this parliament we can undertake such an oversight. Maybe we must ask the dog to work with the team here to see if logistically is still possible. If not, those who are coming in the parliament. But I would be interested to go and see what the dog is doing. And I'm sure members will be interested to go there. Not for all the ones that the scientists are taking, but for a limited period. All right. Thank you very much, team. Thank you very much, DM. We have noted your comments on the relationship. We will deal with that, I think, again next week when we meet with the minister. But otherwise, thank you very much. Tomorrow, is there something? Okay. Tomorrow there is no meeting. The background of course will be a meeting tomorrow. All right. There's nothing tomorrow. We're meeting again next week. I think we'll meet Tuesday with the minister, and Wednesday we are thinking of also getting Sam Park. The number that was a report that we were supposed to get from Sam Park as well as in 1 hour. We are thinking of getting that next week, Wednesday. Okay, and then I'm sure by then the report will be ready from the content of the report. I think documents are related this week. Let members look at the report for the commission. And then next week, Wednesday, we can then look at the report. Okay, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Enjoy your birthday.
We've